Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and caring matriarch. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we're all grappling with in this weekly conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Brad. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well, too. And what's going on?
Well, if you look at chronological age, just stay with me here because I've been teaching some developmental psych the last week, and so it's been on my mind kind of where we are chronologically in our developmental years. And chronologically, I am turning 64 this year.
And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I don't know if that's a congratulation, but yes, I am definitely in a new stage because 55 to 65 puts you chronologically in what they call the young old stage. But when you hit like 64, 65 to 75, you're in what they call the mid old stage.
Okay.
And leaving one stage of anything that said old to another feels a little daunting. And I never really thought when you use the term, you know, when you announce who I am and you say grandmother, it never really felt like much because I'm a grandma. But now that I'm into the mid-old and grandmother piece, I am definitely having some shifts that are happening for me, which is strange and unexpected. I kind of have been looking at 65 as maybe the next marker. So I had another year or so to go. But all of a sudden I've hit this marker, and I'll tell you why it hit me. Because I remember my mom saying to me years ago that when she hit around 60, she became invisible. And I didn't really understand what she was saying, but she would give examples. She goes, I can be standing, you know, in a store or in line somewhere, and the person working there will speak over me as if I'm not there or around me or walk around me. And I always thought my mom was being a little dramatic about it. It's like, because she's not the kind of person she would miss. But it stuck with me that this had happened. And then of course, over, you know, the last 10 or so years, I've heard other people mention that same thing, that they hit a certain age and they started to become invisible, and more so that feeling of almost being irrelevant or not part of the scene. And because I'm still, you know, teaching and on campus, I have kind of had this sense of being hip, you know, continuing to be with it.
Yeah, you're with the kids.
Yeah, I'm hanging with the kids. And so I figured I'm still have it going on. But yesterday, I was walking back from my class to my office, and this young man came walking kind of a little faster next to me and started to move, kind of like cut me off a little bit. And then another person came this way. Clearly it was his friend, and they stopped right in front of me as if I was invisible and started to have a conversation. And I had to stop and
wow.
Then move around them. And it was so shocking. One, my first thought was, how rude, you know, you have no manners. And I wanted to totally be my grandmother and say, listen, Sonny, did you see me walking? But that didn't come out of my mouth, because my second instant thought was, oh my goodness, I was invisible to these kids. They only saw each other, and I was just an apparition,
right,
traveling across campus. So I have been thinking about what that actually means. And again, not this dire move into the depressed, hang out at my house in my house coat, although I do have dreams and fantasies of it, and I know what the house coat looks like. But I'm not at that place that I just want to don it forever. You know, I really do feel that I still am contributing, and, you know, I'm busy on campus, and the feedback is there. So that all still really works. But now I am more aware that I don't know if there's anything I can do to make it different, to be honest, but I think I'm more aware that when I'm working with my students, I want to start passing along to them some nuggets about being aware of those that are not of their age group that still exist. And prior to the pandemic, for 10 years, 12 years, one of my assignments in class was for my students to have a conversation with an elder. And the assignment was to find an elder that they did not know. It couldn't be their grandparent. It couldn't be a grandparent's friend, but it could be their next door neighbor. You know, it could be someone that they met downtown or that they worked with, but they had to make some effort. And the students would always be so perplexed or anxious, like, I never see any old people. I don't know how I'm going to find one. And I said, well, go downtown and start looking, because they actually exist in the wild. You know, they might be at a coffee shop or shopping at the same stores that you shop at. And so that was a very popular assignment, because so many of my students made these really profound connections with people and usually said the same thing. They had so much to share. They had such interesting lives, and they were interested in my life and wanted to know about me. Like, they're very surprised that they could have a coherent conversation with someone. And the age requirement was it had to be someone 75 and older. So it was that was considered on the old side. And so they were so surprised that someone 75 and older could also carry on the conversation. But it also encouraged them. Many of them would write to me and say, after your class, I went and had a conversation with my grandparents, or I spent more time with them. So I'm feeling, after what happened yesterday, like I need to reinstate the conversation with the elder assignment. And because awareness seems to be the only thing that kind of combats it. If we aren't made aware of a circumstance, then we can't be expected to notice or pay attention. And we are a society that loves youth and people who are in their young olds and mid olds and old olds have continued to buy into that love of the youth and want to try to maintain their, agelessness as long as possible. And I'm sure you've read the articles about that guy that spent, I don't know how much, billions of dollars for, you know, serums and potions to try to stay young. I mean, we have such an anti-aging thing in our culture, and we have so much fear around growing old and dying. And we've talked about that before. But I'm feeling like it's important that all of us make more of an effort to connect with younger people so that we don't become invisible in their world. Because if we allow ourselves to back off or retreat or not engage in what's going on in the community ourselves, then we can't expect that the younger generations are going to feel that we have any relevance or that we're part of the community. Because I feel like there's a bit of a two-way street that happens, that the young people are very, you know, self-absorbed in their life and what they're doing, and that's what their trajectory is when you're in your teens and your 20s. But then there's also a bit of, you know, the aging, the elders who are stepping away from wanting to engage in what's happening with the younger generations or in the community, stepping into their own retirement communities or only, you know, spending time with people of their own age or not leaving their house at all. And so if we're not present and engaged, then it's hard to expect anyone to recognize us when we are out in public. And I will start wearing my hot pink hair extensions.
Hey, good move.
Yeah, tomorrow. So that's where I'm at today. And because of this experience, I called on someone that I know can bring some meat to the conversation, my friend Linda Beck. She's going to share with us her years of experience working in long-term care as an ombudsman and being a part of the Care Partner Project speaker team here in San Luis Obispo County, and her own experience with her parents as they aged and passed. And so I'm looking for some guidance and some inspiration. Also, we'll open up the phone lines for anyone else's inspiration, guidance, or thoughts of how we can remain visible in meaningful ways as we age. So this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also send me an email after the show to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can visit my website, TheReluctantTherapist.com, or leave messages on Facebook or Instagram, and I'm happy to respond there as well. You can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcasting the show wherever it is you do your podcast. And kind of neat on my website, thanks to Liz for putting it together. On the website, there are now links to all of the previous shows as well. So there's a lot of ways to find us and listen to shows or share it with others, which I would really appreciate. So we're going to take a quick break, come back, and start our conversation with Linda Beck right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Don't know why, There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all of the time. Oh yeah, life is bare. Gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather, stormy weather. And I just can't get my poor self together.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and my guest today is Linda Beck. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Elizabeth.
All right. So Linda started off her career, we'll say, your life, because it's not your life as being an attorney, but your professional life was working as an attorney for 35 years before you retired. But midway or partway through your career, your parents both were aging, and you found yourself being called into duty down here in San Luis, or here in San Luis Obispo. And through those experiences, you were inspired or maybe felt compelled?
Saw a need.
Saw a need. Okay, I like that term. Saw a need. And so you started learning or educating yourself, becoming an expert in the elder care world and patient advocacy. And then that kind of turned into your work as a long-term care ombudsman. And then currently, the last 2 years, you've been working on the Care Partner Project speaker team for San Luis Obispo County. And that you sounds like is kind of coming to some sort of conclusion or coming up with their findings?
The project that I've been working on for the past 2 years is more local. It's the San Luis Obispo County Master Plan for Aging.
Okay.
And I'm happy to talk about that. Do you want to finish?
Yeah.
Is there more?
Well, there is a lot that you've done. I mean, for 2 years, you facilitated the advisory committee for SLO County's Master Plan for Aging we talked about. And I guess you heard the introduction. There's a couple places I want to go. One, what are some of those challenges that you've experienced in aging and also working as an ombudsman? What are some of the things that seem to be the most difficult for people as they get old? Because, you know, my experience feeling invisible on campus, I don't think is isolated. I would imagine that other people have similar experiences.
Very much so. We do not live in an age-friendly world, and it's something that we're looking hard for ways to change, because the demographics going forward from here around the world pretty much are an aging population, which really inverts the economic structure of a community, as well as kind of refocusing the caregiving equation, because you no longer have as many people to care for the elders as we might have at one time. There's so much that goes into both sides of the equation, both for the older adults and for the generations coming up. The issue I see most frequently, and that to me is most important to break down, is the one that you talked about, the invisibility. And it's not just visual invisibility; it's invisibility in every way. Mm. People tend to forget that older adults are still adults, mm-hmm. and we see this probably most vividly in healthcare. Where the healthcare provider, whoever it is, will often talk right across the gurney, mm-hmm. where the patient is fully awake and able to participate in what's going on, to whoever is with them. And that is I'm sure there's a fancy psychological word for it, but basically it's ignoring a person's personhood. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the projects that kind of bridges all the things that I'm doing and have done is the importance of returning to recognize that older adults are, in fact, still vital, interesting, funny, and all the other things that we think of peers as being. And I really like the idea of working to break down those categories. one of the things I realized just in the last few years is, after hearing for decades about complaints about how younger people are abusing the language, and it's not that they're abusing the language, they're changing it. Mm-hmm. And so that between people my age, which is 66, mm-hmm. and the college students, we are speaking different languages. Mm-hmm. I went into a restaurant by campus a couple of weeks ago, and there was something on the menu called a dia, apostrophe D-I-A. And I can't tell you how long I stood there until I figured out that it was a quesadilla. It was this shortening the words, and just seems to be epidemic. And, you know, I have to ask for translations, and I'm not shy about it.
But you're still going into the restaurants.
Oh,
you're
absolutely.
Not hiding out at home in your house coat.
No, absolutely not. And there are, again, several parts of that. One is that many people are embarrassed by the natural changes that happen as we age. We don't walk as fast. We don't see things all the things that other people may see. And we may not hear all the things that they have to hear. But the abilities are still there. The interest is still there. It may take a little longer to get the words out. There may be some reaching around for words, mm-hmm. but the essential nature of the person does not change. Mm-hmm. And the exceptions to that, obviously, are dementia or some of the other sort of mind cognitive declines mm-hmm. that we unfortunately see in a lot of people.
And are expected, because I remember interviewing an Alzheimer's expert, and he said that cognitive decline is expected as we age. All we really can do realistically is try to delay mm-hmm. the cognitive decline with lifestyle changes. So I always find that that's part of the quotient no matter what. And it's interesting you talked about, you know, being spoken over, especially in medical care. But I was thinking it must be doubly difficult for women because until recently, women were bypassed and their husbands would be addressed if there was any sort of conversation around finances or medical care. So that must be doubly difficult for women who have already been conditioned to be spoken over.
We're outgrowing that, Elizabeth, I'm happy to say. Yeah. But absolutely. It is further compounded if the patient is an older woman of color. And then things get really, really murky. And the healthcare professions are starting to look at that. They're starting to study it. They're starting to recognize the implicit bias mm-hmm. that goes into a lot of the interactions in healthcare, which makes them ineffective from the patient's point of view, sometimes dangerous, and I would think unfulfilling on the healthcare provider's part.
Mm. Because they don't make the connection
right.
that they want to.
Right. Going back to your comment about the Alzheimer's consultant or expert who was saying that cognitive decline is expected. Yes, and some physical decline too. However, one of my favorite books, which is Treat Me, Not My Age, by a doctor out at Cornell Weill School of Medicine back east, is old age is not a diagnosis. There is a specific reason for these changes, and in many cases, it may be reversible to a certain extent. One of the things that we often caution people about is not assuming that every slip of memory inattention is caused by some sort of cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. People take a lot of medications, and a lot of medications can have that kind of effect. Mm-hmm. So if you see someone, an older adult in your life, who is changing cognitively or physically, ideally the first stop is the general practitioner's office. Find out what's going on with them. Get a baseline. Mm-hmm. And of course, in our community, that's can be very challenging mm-hmm. because healthcare access is a very significant issue here across the board, but especially so for older adults.
And I would imagine too, if you're seeing multiple clinicians, then you're going to have multiple medications, and having one person is kind of the keeper of all that information becomes more and more challenging. So I know that we ran into it with, you know, my dad through an event that happened that all of a sudden there was a lot of people with a lot of medications that they wanted to prescribe, but none of them had talked to each other. And so how do you manage that?
Well, that goes back to the bigger issue of self-advocacy in healthcare. Mm-hmm. We are, for better or worse, as patients, largely uneducated about medicine, especially as it's become so complex. At the same time, we have to take responsibility for doing things like running that list of medications through the AARP's medication conflict checker, which will raise a flag if there is a known interaction between the medications.
Can anyone access that?
Yes. It's free online.
So you just go to AARP.
org, mm-hmm. and the medication list. Start there.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Linda Beck. She is a long-term care ombudsman, and we'll just say general expert in the process of aging and looking for care. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. And Charlie, it's good to hear from you. What's in your mind today?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm enjoying your program.
Thank you.
In fact, it's interesting going back to school, Cal Poly in my 70s, and being older than some of my professors.
Yeah, I bet.
And as I recall, I've been a subject of some of your students' inquiries.
Yes, I remember that you were part of the conversation with multiple students.
Oh yeah, yeah. And they did an article on me in the Mustang Daily a while back as the oldest college DJ. How many people in their 70s are doing college radio?
Yeah. Well, and you're 87 now.
Yeah, 87. Yeah. So active in the church, active in community, serve on a mosquito and vector board for the county and various organizations. I'm doing adult ed for our church, and I will have the thing. On campus, I was definitely not invisible.
Well, that's good, because that gives me hope for the future. And Charlie, I am so glad you call in.
Sometimes the circuits run a little slow, and they just take a little longer to things come back. Ivan, that's not a sign of dimensions. It's a sign of changing circuits. Always enjoy your program.
Oh, Charlie, thank you. Call again, please, and I'll be sending a student your way probably in a quarter or two.
Well, I'm no longer at Cal Poly.
That's all right. We'll find you.
Okay, good. You bet. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for calling. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. All right. So, Linda, just go back a little bit to the men-woman thing in society, too, that Charlie doesn't feel invisible, but women tend to.
Very, very.
That hasn't changed, as much as we like to think it has.
It has not. And one of the most interesting books about aging in our society that I've read has a very peculiar title. It's called How to Shoot Old People.
Okay.
And it's actually about photography.
Okay.
And it has to do with the fact that you don't see a lot of photographs of older adults. A lot of older adults don't want to be photographed, mm-hmm. because of the physical changes that are inevitable. And the whole thrust of the book was there is value and there is beauty, and you need to approach it a little differently, mm-hmm. but it's still very much there and deserves to be recognized and discussed and put up on a studio wall
Absolutely. When I do my lecture on aging, I open the lecture with a series of photos of elderly people, the Dalai Lama and other recognizable faces. And I start the lecture by saying, what if you were told from the time you were young that these are the most beautiful people in the world and that you should aspire to maybe hopefully being this beautiful after a life well lived and lots of, you know, lines and wrinkles and scars that show that you've been alive? What if that was our standard of beauty that you had been told since you were young? How would that change how you treat yourself? And it's a really powerful start to lecture because so many of the students, one, have never seen pictures of elderly people. They are all beautiful faces. And at the end of it, the students constantly say the same thing. I never realized how beautiful my, you know, grandparents are or how elderly people are. That's what I'm going to do for my kids. And it's just a matter of the narrative that we're taught, right, of what is beauty. And you're right. So many elderly people won't have their photos taken or stop wanting to be photographed. It happened a lot with my students who are having conversations because part of the requirement was to get a photo if you're with your new friend. And so many said no. So I respected that. But I wish that they could see the beauty for themselves. And I think that might come from, you know, gerontophobia, that internalized sense that I dislike myself because I'm old, right? That hatred for the elderly, not just by other people, but from the person who's grown old themselves.
Absolutely. And that actually leads me back to Charlie's call, which mm-hmm. is where I wanted to go to talk about the fact that he is doing exactly what the most recent series of investigations tell us, which is he is engaged in his community. He's not letting his chronological age hold him back. And I don't know Charlie, so I don't know if he goes to classes in a wheelchair or gets around by himself. There's no substitute for both the curiosity that drives him to do those things and the connections that come out of those experiences. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces of the master plan for aging, both at the state level and locally, has to do with socialization and connection among older adults and other generations in the community. So that is very much on the radar. And people are looking for opportunities to create those connections.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's funny because the topic on many different areas is around the loneliness epidemic and alienation and how the pandemic really compounded this separation that people felt. And the fear of getting sick, you know, a lot of people are still wearing masks. How does that impact people as they age of now having not only the difficulties of getting around, maybe mobility issues, but then now we've kind of had this fear of getting sick because we're in crowds impacted people from wanting to participate or be connected to the community. Have you seen that shift?
Absolutely. There are some people who still won't eat indoors at a restaurant. They'll check to see that there's a patio. They won't go to a crowded movie theater. They go to one of the old line theaters where there are, you know, maybe 10 people in the theater. Mm-hmm. Because COVID was not a joke. It was killing people. Mm-hmm. And it was something that people wanted to avoid if they possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I think those precautions in many cases have carried over to this kind of withdrawal from society.
Yes. And it's easy to do because our homes are comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is so important that people try to find another way of connecting. I was working with Slow Village at the time of the pandemic, and we would arrange porch visits. People would come out on their front porch. A volunteer would drive up. They'd talk from 10 or 12 feet away. Mm-hmm. And it was still possible to establish that connection that way.
Just a little more creativity. Mm-hmm. So before we go to break, can you define ombudsman for people who might not know what an ombudsman is for long-term care? What is that role?
Sure. Ombudsman, and they exist in many, many different parts of the world and different spheres are advocates, basically. Okay. And the concept is that the ombudsman is an independent advocate. We are not beholden to the facilities where we provide services. And our focus is always on the resident and the resident's needs. Different ombudsmen in different spheres work differently, but that's our take on it.
Who hires an ombudsman, though? Is that a county position, or
it varies? I'm sure the university has an ombudsman. Mm-hmm. They probably have several in student affairs to deal with, you know, all the things that come up when you've got a whole bunch of young people clustered together and under pressure.
Trying to navigate the complexities of life.
Exactly. So the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program is actually a national program. It was set up in the 1960s at the federal level after there was an expose on the truly dreadful conditions in nursing homes. That was at the time when the federal government was had just passed the Older Americans Act, mm-hmm. and which set up things like Meals on Wheels and some of the other programs that we count on, or many of our older adults count on. So the program has expanded over the years, and our mandate, if you want, is to go to skilled nursing and assisted living, board and care facilities, and make sure that people are getting their needs met, and to remind them that remind both the residents and the staff, mm-hmm. that residents have rights. They may be unable to dress themselves. They may need help feeding. That doesn't change the fact that they are still entitled to dignity and respect. Mm. And that, as I think I said earlier, is often very challenging in the healthcare setting, yeah. and other caregiving settings.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Linda Beck, and we're discussing some of the challenges of growing old in society when society isn't prepared for any of us to get older. And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation and take your calls right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Ain't nothing I can say, nothing I can do. So bad, yeah. I feel so blue. I got to make it right for everyone concerned. Even if it's me, if it means just me, what's getting burned? 'Cause I could never make you unhappy. No, I couldn't do that, girl. Only wish I didn't love you so. Makes it so, so very hard to go.
So very hard to go.
'Cause I love you so.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation with Linda Beck and myself. All right, Linda, you've worked as a ombudsman long-term care for how long? How long have you been doing this work now?
I was certified as an ombudsman in 2013.
Okay. And you still enjoy it?
I do. It is probably the most worthwhile thing I have ever done, because the population ombudsmen serve are one of the most overlooked. They have the combination in most cases of being older, being unwell, and living in the ones that we see are living in some sort of a facility. And that combines to make them truly invisible, not only to the community because they're not out and about, as you say, in the wild, but to the very often to the people who are caring for them, and sometimes to their families who just don't understand that there's still a person there.
Right. And what are some of the fears then that you hear from the people that you work with? or concerns maybe? What are some of the common concerns that they share with you about aging?
The issues or concerns run the gamut from running out of money, which is a very common fear, because there are no good low-cost options, or not many good low-cost options, for people who want to live at home but need to modify the house so it's safe for them. In your case, your parents' case, getting rid of the stairs. Mm-hmm. And there's always a concern about, you know, what physical physical handicaps might be coming along for them, because everybody seems to have one, mm-hmm. of one sort or another.
So even if they don't have it now, yeah. that kind of fear or concern of losing that mobility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so a lot of people become very risk averse, and sometimes they sort of isolate themselves or hinder themselves from experiencing their life as much as they could.
Mm-hmm. And then what about what's happening in the political landscape? I just, you know, in the last couple of days, or maybe this morning, was announced that federal funding had been
paused.
Right. So what does that mean?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
Because the administration, as I understand it, has not been able to say, for instance, is Medicaid affected?
Right.
There are millions of people of all ages who rely on Medicaid to get health care. And there are people who are probably in the midst of treatment for one issue or another, and they're going to be asking the question, well, what happens now? Mm-hmm. The disruption to the flow of federal money is potentially catastrophic for so many people, because it goes into housing, it goes into food, it goes into healthcare, as I said, transportation. There are very few parts of contemporary life that are not completely insulated from federal funding.
And I imagine Social Security then, too,
oh,
is
yes.
part of that.
Yes.
So if you're an older adult and you're seeing that, what kind of concerns is that raising for them? Because they don't have other streams of income. So what happens?
Well, frankly, a lot of them become homeless. We have seen dramatic increases in the number of unhoused people over 55. I drive in across Prado Road past the homeless shelter on my way to the office, and the number of people I see out there in wheelchairs, in the rain, wearing a plastic bag, with gray hair, with, you know, their bundles and bags, and I have to think, what is wrong with us,
yeah.
that we allow this to happen?
So then the fears that people are expressing to you in some ways are real fears, because
absolutely.
They can see it happening around them.
Yes.
And then I imagine if you don't have that familial support, people checking in with you, it feels even more isolating.
Yes.
To think that this federal funding could just go away with no explanation.
Right. And no backup plan.
Yeah.
Which is typical of what we've been seeing since the inauguration.
That things are just disappearing.
Yes. And that that changes are being made very abruptly and with no backup plan in place.
Yeah. For the people that are
reliant on those programs. Mm. And there are a lot of them.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. And Mary, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking my call. I've always enjoyed your show.
Thank you.
And I worked 35 years in mental health and learned a lot in terms of resiliency. And what I have found, you know, post-retirement, is that I just keep moving. Mm. I have a mantra. People say, how do you do all this? And I go, I just keep moving so death can't find me.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, good plan. So I sing with a local choral group. I volunteer at my church. I work in my church. I sometimes volunteer at KCBX. I found that just being involved in things that require you to interact with other people are very helpful.
Mm.
And I was just going to say that, that there's a lot of seniors out there who never married or who are divorced, have no children. And we had that experience with a member of our choir who she had no relatives and a brother living in Germany and had no like close relatives, and she got cancer. But she had established a social group within our choir that just jumped to her aid and assisted her with her, you know, end of life plans and getting a trustee and figuring things out for her, making sure she was, you know, taken care of. And so I think what happens with a lot of people who are older is they do tend to isolate a little bit. So, you know, my experience has been that having that social network, whether it's, you know, people you quilt with or people you sing with or people at your church, is to not pull yourself out of those environments just because maybe you're not walking as well, or maybe, you know, you have some health issues, is that maintaining that social connection is really important.
I think also having the tolerance for the imperfection of social connections is really important.
Yes, because absolutely.
I hear a lot of older people say, well, I stopped hanging, you know, going to that group because their politics didn't agree with me, or I didn't want to, you know, hear them talking about their grandkids. And I think we have to maintain a certain amount of tolerance for our differences for that social, right, for the greater good of our life, is having that social connection. But
my mom said, my mom used to say she didn't like to be around a bunch of old people that just talked about their medical conditions.
Yes. And my parents call it organ recitals. So that, but I think that it comes, it becomes pretty, it becomes easier to dismiss other people though when they become more difficult to be with, which is also an important piece, to have grace for people as they age or they do have things they need to talk about. Maybe you are the only outlet. And so it goes back to my feeling at the beginning of these intergenerational relationships and learning to have grace and tolerance for things that aren't perfect. And I'm wondering if a bit of the pandemic allowed us to give in a bit more to our intolerance. It's like, well, if something's a hassle, I'll just watch TV at home instead of going to my choir rehearsal. But instead, you know, you're getting yourself up, Mary, and going to these things. And I'm sure you don't get along with everyone all the time, but you, the value of the community is more than someone who might be annoying.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of ways of establishing these connections, including getting a pet. And that's not everybody likes to be in a group. And I think it's wonderful that Mary participates in all of these activities.
For sure.
But, you know, am I going to join a quilting group? Probably not. And you really do not want me singing. That would be terrible.
But I do have a pet as well.
Good.
Good for you.
Good.
And also, please don't get a pet and then leave it for your children when you're gone.
Just right.
A little
right.
side note. Mary, thanks for taking the time to call. I appreciate you.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Linda Beck, ombudsman, elder care expert, and also you've been a member for the last couple of years in the project of putting together the Advisory Committee for San Luis Obispo County's Master Plan for Aging. And I'm curious to know what the goals were for this task force and what have kind of advisory things have you come up with that are going to be helpful and make a difference?
The group got started and the discussion got started because a number of care providers, organizations in the community were talking about the fact that we do have good resources here. Many of them are the best kept secrets on the Central Coast.
Okay.
And that at the same time, each group was so busy doing what they do that there was no strategy or overall plan for how to identify needs and ways to meet them. And how to kind of stay ahead of the curve as the population changes.
Okay.
And this move started at the state level. Governor Newsom set up the master plan at the state level in 2019, I think. And that has spawned programs that encourage local communities to develop their own plan. So California, San Luis Obispo requested a grant from the California Department of Aging in 2023 to fund development of a local master plan for aging. And the county got the grant. The small group of providers who had been having the conversation has grown enormously. We now have about 45 people on the committee and representing 30 organizations or more.
Wow.
In healthcare.
All nonprofits?
Well, some of them are in healthcare, which is nominally nonprofit. Mm-hmm. The charitable organizations in the community, as well as some of the businesses that serve older adults, transportation and so on. And we have been able to have in this community for the first time a real conversation around the specific issues we face in this area and how we can address them. The plan, when we started looking at it, the objectives were to improve the overall livability of the community for people of all ages and abilities, to address systemic age and disability-related inequities, mm-hmm. Strengthen cross-sector collaboration to accomplish the goals, and transform the infrastructure of services so that people can be better informed and know where to turn when they need help, when things don't go well.
Because I would imagine in the tech world, you know, that we live in now, it's hard to get information out to people because not everyone has a computer or a phone or read the newspapers that don't exist anymore. How do we disseminate information to people who have different access levels to information?
It is a huge challenge. It may, in fact, be the biggest challenge that we face with the local master plan.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the old structures that used to be a way of getting word out to people, service clubs and things like that, aren't as common or as mm-hmm. widespread now as they used to be. So the way the grant worked for Slo County was that the county hired a consultant to do outreach, and that was a collective effort. They went to the Area Agency on Aging, and then they started reaching out through the client bases of some of the organizations that participate in the advisory council. We had the healthcare providers distributing the questionnaire. We had senior centers distributing the questionnaire. And although we were not able to meet all of the elements of the community that we wanted to reach, some of them are simply too remote. Mm-hmm. We were able to make contact with over 700 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Through the series of community meetings and survey.
And so what are a couple of services that you feel like are hidden gems that people should know about?
Transportation, public transportation. If you don't drive a car in this county, it's really tough to get around. And although there are transportation services, they can be very hard to navigate because there is no one service that goes up to Paso and down to Napomo. Mm-hmm. What there are is a sequence of independent agencies of various kinds. And I once sat down to try to figure out how to get from Paso to San Luis and back in a day. And I had to give up. It was so frustrating. Mm. But there is a program called Know How to Go that's hosted by the San Luis Obispo County of governments, and they have travel trainers. You can call up, tell them where you are, where you want to go, when you want to go there, and they will sort through all of the different options and tell you the best way to get from A to B at the lowest cost.
Know How to Go.
Know How to Go, yes.
And is that a phone number or is that a website?
It is actually a live service, and you can reach it by dialing 211 or 511. That's the general community information lines.
And that might be another nugget that a lot of people don't utilize are 511 and 211, which are basic information lines,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if you're having trouble getting around or finding services, that's another place to go.
Very good place to go. Mm-hmm. The Area Agency on Aging is another resource that not enough people know about. We have a program that's shared with Santa Barbara County, but their office is in Santa Maria, and you can call them to ask all sorts of questions about Medicare and health insurance options, fraud alerts, and if you have questions about whether something's a scam, they're a good place to call. Scams are one of the things I wanted to touch on because they are so devastating financially and emotionally to the older population in particular.
And to be able to check that through AARP, they have a way that you can check for scams, and then also the area.
Agency on Aging.
Our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Richard, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
You mentioned a moment ago that federal funding has been stopped. And I'm just wondering, since I'm living on SSI, if that means that people aren't going to get SSI.
Richard, at this point, we don't know. The announcement was made this morning in Washington, and the federal agencies were given until 5 o'clock this afternoon to suspend all of their funding activities, and we really don't know yet how widespread that is going to be.
Was there a reason to give them?
This, as I understand it, is part of the administration's effort to reduce fraud and waste throughout the government. They're taking a pretty broad axe to it, though.
God, it's incredible.
It is, and don't panic, because for whatever comes out of the White House, there are still a lot of people in the federal agencies who will work to address people's needs. And Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid are three of the kind of third rail programs that it would be unthinkable for an administration to try to change those significantly without paying a pretty heavy political price.
But it is something that we need to be aware of, and I guess it's a good time to be, you know, tuning into KCBX News or check out the webpage for, you know, anything that comes up. I'm sure there'll be postings of any news that follows that, Richard.
Yeah, well, when it comes to not paying taxes, I mean, they're not going to put themselves in a position where people aren't paying them. I mean, they have all kinds of penalties if you're late. And
the devil, as they say, is in the details. Yeah. And I imagine that we will be getting clarifications for the foreseeable future on what's going to happen to various programs and how the nation is expected to cope with this particular funding source simply cut off.
Does that mean that they're cutting it off at the federal level or at the local level?
My understanding is that the order applies to federal agencies, but federal agency money flows into a great many local programs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it takes us. But Richard, thank you for listening and tuning in. And also keep up with the KCBX webpage, because I know they're posting news updates all the time and also on the air. So thank you for your call. All right, Linda, in the last couple of minutes, I really would like you to share what would have been helpful for you to know when you took on the care of your parents. What would have been the most couple helpful things for you?
The most difficult things for me were getting a handle on the healthcare situation for them, because none of us are really trained to be patients, and there is so much to know. There are patient advocacy organizations and service providers. There are also some very good sources for lay people to get information about the most effective way to work with your healthcare providers. Okay. The Care Partner Project is one of those.
And then how about the economic aspect of helping your parents?
The economics are very challenging. A lot depends on your relationship with the older person. I was very fortunate that I had good, trusting relationships with both of my parents, so I knew how to arrange their finances so that all of their needs were met. That's not the case for everybody, of course, and it can devolve on the children if the parents aren't prepared. And a lot of parents, I think, could use a reminder that if they don't deal with the questions of where the money goes, where the house goes, where all the things they've accumulated throughout their lives, what happens to those after they pass, they're leaving their children with a horrendous task of cleaning up a mess.
And so now you've taken all of this knowledge and you've created this way of helping others. How long do you see yourself continuing to be an advocate for the older population?
I would like to continue this work for as long as I can. And ombudsmen are remarkably long-lived. We've had people who are visiting facilities well into their 80s.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in, spending the hour with me. I would imagine we're going to need to have a conversation again with the changes that are happening federally. So please, if you will, come back. I would appreciate that.
It would be a pleasure.
This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow me on Instagram or Facebook. You can check out the website, thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show wherever it is you find your podcast and share with your friends. But as always, I appreciate you being a part of our community, calling in, sharing your thoughts, listening to the show, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Looking through some photographs I found inside a drawer, I was taken by a photograph of you. There were one or two I know that you would have liked a little more, but they didn't show your spirit. Turning round to see who was behind you, and I took your childish laughter by surprise. And at the moment that my camera happened to find you, there was just a trace of sorrow. The things that I remember seem so distant, so small, though it hasn't really been that long a time. What I was seeing wasn't what was happening at all, although for a while our path did seem to climb. See through love's illusions, there lies the danger. And your perfect lover just looks like a perfect fool. So you go running off in search of a perfect stranger, while the loneliness seems to spring from your life like a fountain from a pool.